Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
All right, we're back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as promised, we're visiting with our good friend Doug Stires. Let me tell you a little bit about Doug. Some of you, if you've only been listening to this hour of the Small Business Advocate Show for a while, then you might not be familiar with Doug's name and with his voice, because Doug has been with us mostly in other hours, but he has been on the show quite a few times in the last few months to help us understand accounting and tax matters. Doug is a partner at Kirchen & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey. He is the manager of the tax department at Kirchen & Company, which is the largest CPA firm in central New Jersey. Doug is very active with the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, as he'll tell you a little bit about later on today. And he is also often seen on CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, and all those other channels. In fact, I saw him as recently as the January 1st on CNBC, and he did a great job. Doug, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be. Actually, it's not so good to be with you. It's too early in the morning, Jim.
Yeah, I know. You CPAs don't start the war this early, usually, do you?
Usually get up around 10 up here.
Yeah, I believe that. Well, Doug, thank you for being with us again, and I did want to compliment you on the air. I've already done it by email, but I want to compliment you on the air for doing a great job on CNBC on January 1st.
Hey, how many times can you wake up on New Year's Day and watch a CPA from New Jersey entertain you?
That was fun, though. You did good. I was impressed. I'd seen you once before on CNBC one time earlier, but that seemed like that was a short segment. You were on this one for just about the whole hour.
Well, mainly because it was a holiday and the stock market was closed, so they were digging for stuff.
They were saying, stretch, stretch.
You can't believe the number of people who watch that stuff. That was beyond my comprehension.
Oh, yeah. No, you acquitted yourself very well. I know your mother was very proud of you. And
she didn't even know about it.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, you should have told
her. Watching me on television.
Well, I'm sure you'll send her a tape. All right, folks, 888-822-8255. We have the expert, the small business advocate expert for tax matters and accounting matters. If you have a question about your tax situation, a question about any kind of accounting financial matters, please give us a call, and Doug will be glad to talk to you about it. Between the two of us, maybe we can help you a little bit. I've got a couple of trivia questions I want to ask you. One is, I mentioned a minute ago, John Hancock, one of the great founders of this country, signed in a very important document, and he was born on this day in 1737. What was the name of the document that his famous signature is on? Also, on this day in 1971, All in the Family, the TV series All in the Family appeared, premiered, I should say. And what was the nickname or the pejorative name or the whatever you want to call it name that the old man called his son-in-law? It was a name that was sort of a negative type of thing. Anyway, what was that name? Also, Jack London wrote The Call of the Wild. What was that? What was the animal? What kind of an animal was the subject of that book, The Call of the Wild? 888-822-8255. Give me a call, and I've got a whole lot of books here that I want to give away. I want to give you a copy of one of them, and I'll let you pick one out. 888-822-8255. Doug, tell me a little bit about what's going on for you in 1999. I know you've got some projects happening that would be of interest to my audience.
We sure do. 1998 is behind us. The year-end planning season is kind of behind us, but our AICPA is meeting. In fact, I'm leaving this afternoon to go down to Florida. We're running a joint meeting on Thursday with the ABA, the American Bar Association, what they call their tax section group, to look at the projects that they have ongoing and kind of parallel them to our projects and see if we can't go to Congress and petition for some of the things that we feel are unfair and need to be changed in the federal tax law. Just among them, that near and dear to some people that are out there this morning, is the so-called marriage penalty. If a husband and wife are both working, and particularly if they're making comparable incomes, it would actually be cheaper for them to get divorced and file as two single taxpayers. And we feel this is just patently unfair and We've come up with a couple of different ways to fix it. Unfortunately, none of the fixes are very simple, but my definition of tax simplification is always if it saves you tax, you can tolerate it.
Right. That penalty has been around a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has, because years ago, if you filed singly, your tax brackets ran at basically 50% of what the joint brackets were, so there was no advantage to being single. And they made the mistake, or maybe the advantage, of giving single people a bit of a break. Now, I have to point out that probably the majority of married people are not hit with the marriage penalty, Jim. In case I use myself as an example, my wife works part-time and stays home with my children most of the time, so I make more than she does. And in our case, it's actually cheaper and beneficial to file jointly. If we were filing two separate returns, or two single returns, I should say,
right,
it actually cost us more. But so many, particularly young people today, they both work and make comparable salaries.
Dinks. They're called dinks.
Yeah.
Double income, no kids.
Right, right. And they're paying a marriage penalty. And obviously, they don't think it's fair. A lot of people say, well, why don't they just fix it? And the answer to this and other things we're going to talk about is that it's a big loss in revenue. If the government were just to say you can file any way you want, it would cost them billions of dollars in lost revenue. And, you know, Congress is like a spoiled kid. You can't take money away from
there
it.
Goes that surplus the politicians want to campaign on next time.
They have spent that so many times, we're into triple digits, I think.
I believe it. What's the next one?
Well, the other one that's one of my pets that doesn't affect a whole lot of people, but the individual alternative minimum tax. If you're fortunate enough to have a fair amount of income, or kind of the converse, if you're unfortunate enough to have a whole lot of deductions, you're particularly in the tax and miscellaneous deduction areas on the itemized deduction portion of your personal tax return. Some people don't even realize this, that they've paid this. They've used to prepare to do the return, and something mean and ugly comes up called the alternative minimum tax.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum tax. Other people have done their own returns, completely ignored the alternative minimum tax, not even knowing about it, and they've got a nasty letter from the IRS coming back saying, oh, by the way, we're sorry to tell you, you're subject to the alternative minimum tax. And as the name implies, it is an alternative computation. You do the regular tax computation, then you basically start over again and do this alternative computation. And if you find out that your alternative tax is higher than your regular tax, you pay the higher of the two. It's just patently unfair, Jim. They've got two tax systems. The first one doesn't catch you, the second one does.
Exactly. Double whammy. All right, Doug, stand by. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is our good friend Doug Stires, the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show. Our number is 888-822-8255. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, folks. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest today is our very good friend, Doug Stives, who is the Small Business Advocate CPA for of record. He is our resident CPA. He is a member of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust and has been with us many times on the show. And folks, I want to give away, this hour, I want to give away a copy of Gary Schilling's book called Deflation. Deflation is something that's happening around the world right now in a lot of areas, and Gary's written an outstanding book that talks about that. It's called Deflation, and it's a very interesting book, very good book, and I want to give that one away today if you will call me and answer one of my trivia questions. Also, you can use the same number to call and ask Doug Stives a question about your tax issues or anything to do with your small business, or you can even ask him a personal question about your tax matters, 888-822-8255. Doug, you were talking about AMT.
Alternative minimum tax.
How far back does that go, and why did they initiate that?
Well, that actually goes back to our good friend Richard Nixon. Back when he was popular, there was a lot of publicity that it was a small number. It was, believe it or not, like 150 people in the whole country who were paying no income tax. They were just kind of thumbing their nose at the system, was the perception, Jim.
And these were wealthy people.
Yeah. So in 1969, Congress passed this alternative minimum tax. Actually, there have been three versions of it. We're in the third version of it now, kind of like software, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, they came along and they said, if you have certain deductions, especially losses from inactive businesses, or what we now call passive activity losses, that you can't deduct them. And they also came through and said, if you had capital gains, that a portion of it back then was not taxable, they made you add that back. And they started this concept of adding back things that were normally deductible. There was a second version, a little modification. Then in 1986, they came up with the present version, which is just an abomination. And I'm sitting here looking at a graph, Jim, that was in Sunday's New York Times. Anybody has this past Sunday's New York Times, the 10th of January? The front page of the money and business section is a picture there of an attorney with 13 kids, if you can imagine. And he, of course, got snagged with the AMT, is the theme of the article. But the graph I'm looking at shows that in 1999, over 2 million taxpayers, which doesn't sound like a lot, will generate over $5 billion worth of tax revenue by paying alternative minimum tax. Now, that doesn't excite a whole lot of people, but the projection is here by the New York Times that by the year 2008, 9 years from now, over 11 million taxpayers, five times as many, will get hit with the AMT, and it will raise over $25 billion. So understand the frustration that we as the CPA societies and the AICPA have as we're going to Congress and we're saying, get rid of this thing. And they're looking at it saying, well, it's a perception that it's only for very wealthy people, and it raises a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're kind of between a rock and a hard place, but we're trying our darndest to probably not get this thing eliminated, but at least get it pared down so that it doesn't start to snag millions and millions of taxpayers out there.
Well, this is an insidious tax that really, as it currently is operating, was not what it was intended initially to accomplish.
No. Well, here's the guy whose picture is on the front of this money and business section of the Times on Sunday. An attorney. He makes about $75,000 a year. He works out of his home. He's out in the Midwest, and his situation is he has 13 children. If you can believe it, when you compute the alternative minimum tax, they give you no credit or no deduction for your own children's exemption. So the only reason that he gets hit with the AMT, Jim, is because he cannot deduct the exemptions, which are now $2,700 apiece, for his 13 kids and he and his wife. So bang, he winds up getting hit with this alternative tax computation costing more than the regular tax computation. And what he did is he didn't pay the AMT. He said, I don't believe that was congressional intent to tax somebody with 13 kids. And of course the IRS did their job. I don't fault the IRS. They don't write the laws. Came back and said, sir, you are wrong. They went to tax court. He lost. And of course he's in the process right now of appealing through the federal court system to try to convince the court system that this was not Congress's intent, and that he should not be hit with the AMT. So it's getting a lot of publicity, which we think is wonderful, because that's the way that will influence Congress if they've got to change it.
Well, you know, a lot of people do tax planning during the year. They kind of keep up with their expenses and their income, and they do quarterly withholding, or they do, the company does withholding on them, and they think they kind of know where they are every year, but they don't. Many times they don't take into consideration AMT. That hits them at the last minute after they can't do any more business, any tax planning.
It's like a snake coming out of the grass.
It really is, yeah. All right, stand by. We've got to take a break, folks. 29 after the hour, 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blasingate. We'll be right back. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is our good friend Doug Stives. Doug is the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show. He's a managing partner of the tax department at Kirchen & Company, which is the largest CPA firm out of Red Bank, New Jersey, in central New Jersey. And he's our good friend and has been with us quite a few times before. And Doug, Chuck tells me we have a caller. Who we got, Chuck?
We've got Peggy in Independence, Missouri.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Oh, fine.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Say hello to Doug Stives.
Hi, Doug. Hi.
What can we do for you, Peggy?
Oh, I just called in to answer your question about Jack London.
It was an aardvark, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Huh?
No, wasn't.
No.
Was it a wolf?
You're right.
Oh,
it was
great.
A wolf. I just thought I'd try to trip you up a little bit there.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. Yeah. No, I tell you, I ask a lot of questions on the show, and that's typically the kind of question that nobody wants to answer. So I'm proud of you, Peggy, for doing that. Would you like a copy of Gary Shilling's book called Deflation?
Yes, that sounds great.
I think you'd like that one. It's a good book. What do you do, Peggy?
I sell steel framing for residential homes.
Really?
Yes, uh-huh.
You work for yourself, or you work for another company? Or?
For myself.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. How long have you been doing that?
About 2 years.
Tell me a little bit about your company.
Well, we're located in Independence, Missouri, and just trying to introduce this new system, you know, into this area.
Right.
It's more popular in the south and along the coastline.
Uh-huh.
But we're doing pretty well.
Great. Is there anything we can do to help you?
No, I'm hoping not. I think I have my tax thing under control here.
I hope you have a good CPA, Peggy.
Excuse me?
I hope you have a good CPA.
Yeah, we do. Yes.
How did you select your CPA?
How did you select your CPA?
I'm not sure. It was a friend of a friend that recommended
go.
Or something.
Yeah. Well, great.
I find that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Well, Peggy, thank you very much. What radio station are you listening over?
KCXL.
KCXL, yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're good folks out there.
Yes, they are. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a good station. We appreciate you doing that, Peggy. And keep listening, and let us know if we can do anything to help you. Stay tuned so Chuck can get your address.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Your book. Thanks, Peggy, for calling.
Uh-huh.
All right. Doug?
Jim,
Chuck tells me we have one more call.
Yeah, we've got Marilyn in Niceville, Florida.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I'm from Niceville, Florida. I listen to you all the time on my way to coming to work. I'm at work
now.
I got this one question. My daughter and I incorporated last year hoping to get into a business, and it never got off the ground.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering about what am I looking forward to in my taxes? If I didn't have any income at all, and my only outgo was to incorporate,
the only money you spent was for incorporating expenses.
Exactly.
Okay. Go ahead, Doug.
You formed a regular corporation in the state of Florida, it sounds like. Do you know if you made something called an S election to be treated as what we call an S corporation under the federal tax law, Peggy?
I believe it
you're
was.
Not Peggy, you're Maryland.
Maryland, That's right.
You believe that you did?
Yes.
And what happens is you're going to need to file a tax return for that corporation.
Uh-huh.
Or let me stop again. Do you want to continue this operation, or are you just going to set it aside and abandon it?
I believe we're going to have to set it aside and abandon it
Okay. I'd want you to get some advice from someone in Florida to find out if you have any responsibility with the Florida Department of Revenue, and you may need to file some forms to get the corporate charter revoked. But for federal taxes, you really don't even need to ever file a federal tax return. You could file it one time, run into the expenses you had through there, which is, since it's an S corporation, that loss would just come over onto your personal tax return, your regular individual Form 1040, and you'd be able to subtract that loss, all the money you spent, legal fees and whatever else you might have spent to get this thing set up, as a deduction. That's assuming you're going to abandon it. If you're going forward, then the law says you're supposed to capitalize those expenses or take those expenses and hold them until you have income to offset them against. But 98, you had a plan, you spent the money, you're really entitled to a deduction for those. And I'm hedging a little bit, but the right way to do it is to put it on a corporate return.
Okay.
Pass that loss through.
Okay. I appreciate this very much. Thank
Marilyn,
you. Yes, sir.
Marilyn, if you don't dissolve that corporation, or if you dissolve it and you don't make some kind of contact, and Doug, you correct me if I'm wrong here, if you don't make some kind of contact with the federal government, if they know that you had a corporation and you don't make some kind of contact with them, either to file a return, as Doug says, or something, even if you don't owe any tax, they will hound you to find out where your tax return is, because, see, they don't know that you haven't done anything, and they assume you're skipping on them.
Yes.
Right, Doug?
Yeah, but if you file that one-time tax return for an S corporation, it's something called a Form 1120-S. It's an information return, because S corporations generally don't pay any tax. You show no income, you show the expenses, you pass that loss through on something called a Schedule K-1, and then you mark on the return that it is a final return. Also, I'm getting a little technical now, but since you're dissolving a corporation, you should file another form with the IRS, called a Form 966, IRS Form 966. And you fill that out, and you basically say we had no reason to stay in business, and we've agreed before December 31st of 98 to cease and desist, or to dissolve and liquidate, are the actual legal terms.
Uh-huh.
Does that help, Marilyn?
It helps a whole lot.
That won't cost you a lot of money to get all that done, by the way, so don't worry about it, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening, Marilyn.
Thanks.
Hang in there.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we've got to take a quick break. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. Doug Stiles and I will be right back. All right, we're back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is our good friend Doug Stives. He's the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show, and he's a member of the Brain Trust. He is also the manager of the tax department at Kirchin & Company, which is the largest CPA firm out of Red Bank, New Jersey. And as I said a minute ago, he is our friend and has been with us quite a few times before. Doug, I want to back up and talk just a little bit more about what Marilyn had to say. Marilyn, if you're still listening, keep copies of everything you do. Lock them up in a safe somewhere of everything you do with regard to your taxes and dissolving that corporation, because I promise you, as God is my witness and Doug will back me up, you will need those copies. I promise you, you'll need them because somebody, it might happen 5 years from now, you're going to get a notice from the IRS. It might be 5 years from now, but you're going to get a notice, and they're going to say, what did you do with this corporation? Where is your tax return, et cetera, et cetera? And you're going to have to send them a copy of that return. Doug, would you agree with me?
Yeah, I'll temper a little bit of what you said, though, Jim. If she does what she needs to do now and gets that, or I'll say the forms again, the 1120S, which is the corporate return for Nest Corporation, gets that filed, sends in a Form 966, that's the notice to the IRS that you're out of business, that you've liquidated all your assets or anything that was in the corporation. If they wait and come back 5 years from now, the IRS can't do a thing because there's a 3-year statute of limitations, and once you file a form, if they don't question it within 3 years, there's not a darn thing they can do.
Well, maybe my years were wrong, but I will tell you, I'm not saying that they have anything that they can accomplish. I'm just saying that they will pester her about it.
Right. You want to see if I was listening. But
yeah. Well, that's true. And I've got a couple more things I want to say, but right now, Doug, Chuck tells me we have another caller. Who we got, Chuck?
Yeah, we've got Greg in Kansas City.
Hi, Greg.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I was going
to ask your guest about this alternative minimum tax. When does someone need to take a look and see whether or not that applies to them?
Oh, that's a tough question, Greg, but I'll try to give you some guidelines. Now, understand we're talking individuals here. If you're talking about alternative minimum tax for a corporation, that's another topic for another day. But on an individual basis, if your total income, your so-called adjusted gross income, is below $50,000, you generally don't have to worry about AMT. In fact, most cases that we find that people get hit with is when they're significantly over $100,000 of total income. But the other thing that generally triggers it with my clients, Greg, is people who have high itemized deductions on their personal return, particularly in the tax area, you know, high real estate taxes or high state and local income taxes, particularly if maybe you got audited by your state and you got hit with paying thousands of dollars of additional state tax. When you go to do your federal return at the end of the year, you'll find that you don't get a benefit from all those deductions because AMT creeps its way onto your return. Another one is if you have high miscellaneous itemized deductions. If you have, for example, high unreimbursed business expenses, you work for a company and they don't pay you for all your expenses, and you try to list those on your return, you'll be unhappily surprised that when you do your return, again, AMT is going to creep up and get you. You know, those are the main areas that my type of clients get hit with. If you're into oil and gas investments, or you're into a lot of property where you're taking heavy depreciation on a tax return, those are other areas that you're prime candidate for that rotten AMT, Greg.
Okay, that's what my question was.
Hope you're not among them.
Fortunately, I'm not. And as far as John Hancock, he signed the Declaration as well as author of the Constitution.
The Declaration, good for you. Greg, you want a copy of Gary Shilling's book?
I would love one.
All right, great. Yeah, good for you. We'll send you that out. Be sure that Chuck gets your address before you hang up. And Greg, what do you do for a living?
Well, I am a sales manager for an industrial tool supplier, and back in December, I started my own home-based business.
All right. Tell us what that is. Do you want to? Would you like to tell us?
Sure. I am working with a company called Advantage International, and basically what our job is we work with the home-based business people, teaching them what tax deductions are for their business, so that they can have the proper documentation to give to their CPA.
Ah, that sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Yes, it is. Because, you know, the problem with doing returns, especially on a home-based business with a CPA, if you don't provide the right documentation to your CPA, he doesn't know what they are.
Right, right. Doug, you got any thoughts on that?
I think that's great. One of the biggest frustrations we have, particularly going into tax season, is just what Greg is saying. People come in and they haven't a clue what it is that we need.
Right.
So, Greg, I'm glad you're out there and wish you were working in our part of the world.
But Greg, the more success you have with that business, I hate to tell you this, but the more success you have with that business and the more itemized deductions that you wind up having because you'll be like an independent contractor, probably for at least until you incorporate, the more likely he is to get into the AMT problem, isn't he?
Well, fortunately not, Jim, because as a self-employed individual, you're doing a Schedule C, or if it's assuming you're not incorporated, and those deductions do not trigger the AMT.
I thought they did.
No, I'm happy to say that.
I was thinking that happened to me one time. Maybe it was something else that triggered it.
Well, maybe you did your return wrong.
Well, that's quite possible. That's quite possible. No, I didn't do it. I don't do my return. I hire that.
I hope not, Jim.
I get a CPA to do my return.
What I want you to do, Jim, is you go to Greg. He'll tell you what's deductible, and then you bring it to me.
That's what I need to do. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling, buddy.
Thank you much.
All right, man, you're my hero. It's 50 after. We're going to be right back with Doug Stiers. Stay with us, please. I'm Jim Blessington, the Small Business Advocate. All right, we're back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blessington, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you, all of you who have been calling in. We appreciate that very much. Doug likes that a lot. In fact, I'll let you know that Doug will be back with us a week from today, 1 week from right now. Doug will be back with us, so save up your questions and we'll see if we can't get him to. I know he'll help you out a little bit, as he did today, as he helped Marilyn and Peggy and Greg. Doug, let's wrap the hour up. One of the things that I wanted to say is we were talking about getting things back from the IRS. Always make sure you keep copies of everything that you've got, because you will get inane and seemingly stupid requests from the IRS. They'll say, why didn't you send this in, or why didn't you file this return? I filed an LLC return on time last year. There was no tax due because, as you know, it passed right through to the partners, to me and my partner on that. There was no tax due. We actually had a loss that we passed through. The IRS recently sent me an intent to levy notice. Swear to God, the first notice I got from them, Doug, was an intent to levy.
I gave them your number.
I believe it. For $505, which is a penalty for failure to file a tax return that we actually filed on a return that had no tax due, they're going to penalize us $505, and they were going to levy from us. Now, that's the first time that I'd ever gotten a notice, and the first notice I got was a certified notice and an intent to levy notice, the very first one. And on a return that they said I didn't file that I had no tax due on.
One of the biggest pains in the neck with partnership returns, and that's what an LLC files, that
yes,
if you send it in late, or in the case, Jim's case, is obviously they didn't have a record of receiving it in the first place, they charge you $50 a month.
Per partner.
Per partner until you file. So even if there's no tax, you can run up a bill, as you're talking about, of $500 just in a few months.
And see, we've already contacted them. We've sent them copies of everything that we did.
Right.
But my point is if we had not had all that, we would have had to send them a check just to keep them from levying our checking account.
Well, I'll go a step further. Is I've had a number of those notices, as you can guess, and we've yet to pay one of those penalties. It's a pain in the neck. You've got to fight with them and sometimes write a series of letters. But the message I want to get out to people is don't just cave in and pay a penalty. Fight with them.
But, as I say, Doug, I agree with you 100%, but please keep copies of everything that you do, because you will need them at some point in time, no question. And one more thing, by the way, on I think it was Marilyn. One thing you and I forgot to mention, Doug, was the franchise tax. She probably owes the state $40-$50 of franchise tax.
Yeah, we did mention that she's going to need to do whatever she has to do with the Florida Department of Revenue.
Right, but franchise tax specifically is one of those things.
Yeah.
Doug, you had something you were wanted to mention about Peggy, I think.
Yeah, the first call we had this morning was from Peggy.
We got about a minute.
I asked her how she went about selecting her CPA, and I think we can wrap up this morning by pointing out that it's January. This is the time of year to look for a CPA. Even if you have one and you're not 100% satisfied, treat your CPA like your doctor. If you don't like him and don't feel comfortable and doesn't have good bedside manner, you know, go out and look for somebody else. And Peggy mentioned the CPA she selected was a friend of a friend, not somebody she saw on a billboard or got direct mail from. She will talk to people that she knows, people that she trusts. Ideally, people that are in the same business, same line of business that you're in. And then go interview that person, but do it now. I get upset when people call me in March or April to interview me, but if they call me now, I can see them pretty quickly, and I'm not half asleep yet, and can give people a pretty good idea how we might be able to give them some service and hopefully save them some money.
Exactly. Well said, Doug. Thank you very much for your time today. You did a great job, as always. We'll see you next week. Have a good one.
Nice to see you.
I got to wrap it up for this hour. It's 58 after. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners like Peggy and Marilyn and Greg. Because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.